Okay, hi there, this is George R. R. Martin. I'm here in Venice at the food truck, and hello to everybody who's listening out there.
You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode number 250 for the week of November 24th, 2019. Welcome back, listeners, to the longest-running podcast dedicated to the epic glory of George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. As always,
this is Ashley.
This is Amin.
And this is Kyle. And we got three quarters of the party here tonight.
That's right.
The team.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, I don't think we'll ever see Mimi again.
She's on permanent parental leave, so.
Yeah, what does she have, like five kids now?
She just keeps having kids and gets all the benefits, so that's okay.
Gets all the benefits?
Yeah, we have a really good health plan.
Not having to podcast?
Yeah, we have a health plan to the podcast. Okay. Then you can get as much parenting time as you want.
Wait a minute, we have a health plan? Why don't you tell me about this?
Send our receipts to Amin.
Yeah. Send your receipts to you. I'll refund you in 5 years. That's okay. Processing.
It's 5 years, that's it? All right, fine.
Processing fee. That sounds about right, isn't it?
I think Amin's a millionaire, Ashley.
Yeah.
I think he's up there.
If I was a millionaire, I'd be hosting a convention for just our podcast. Okay, so if you have one of those listeners out there and you're willing to do so, let us know. We will do that.
If you are a multi-millionaire and just want to throw away, you know, maybe 50 grand, so you don't need a lot.
No, it wouldn't be that much at all. Like, if you're an eccentric millionaire, you could easily afford it, and we'd do it.
We need a sugar daddy or a sugar mama. My dad always tells me I should find a sugar mama out here in L.A.
We need to find some marriage offers. We need to get some marriage offers here. Speaking of this chapter.
True. Yeah. But before we get there, we got any news or anything?
We do. Two things. The first is A Clash of Kings. The illustrated edition is out now at the 20-year anniversary of A Clash of Kings. So we were lucky enough to get a few review copies here. So I thought we'd do a quick review of it.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's A Clash of Kings, but it's a gorgeous, I think even better than the first book. Like, I really like the cover for this, like the blue and gold cover. And then you got the colored, it was the same as the first Game of Thrones colored map, like the fully colored map in the interior. And then there's interspersed between it are color artwork, like beautiful rendition here, like full color. So that's nice. Sometimes it's in black and white.
And all the illustrations are done by Lauren K. Cannon.
Oh, is it all one artist that did it?
I believe so. I didn't think it was at first, but she's the only one who's credited, so I assume so.
She's got, a very nice style. Like, as you said, I think you said on Twitter, she's not bound to the TV show for her interpretations, right? She has her own book based.
Right. That's one of the things I really enjoyed, is that the art is not, you know, Sean Bean as Ned Stark. Well, obviously he's not in this book, but, you know, it's not Peter Dinklage as Tyrion. It's her own interpretations of the characters. And, like, Tyrion and Brienne are friggin' ugly.
Well, I was specifically going to talk about that. I'll post this photo with the episode, but if you go to page 500 and then flip over to Brienne, like, I think that's a pretty more realistic portrayal of Brienne. You can see it matching, like, it kind of matches what I thought of Brienne.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you have Tyrion there in the next page.
Yep.
The other one that I'll post with this episode is a page 820. There's Melisandre's scene where she's on that boat with Davos about to give birth. What I found interesting about that was, that was all about darkness, yet there is supposed to be light there involved. It's almost like a religious light view there with her there. So I find that interesting, that interpretation there, and it very much could be the way it could be pictured.
It's almost like this Virgin Mary kind of thing.
That's right, except what's coming out is not...
not Jesus.
That's right. So I found, good artwork, and it's like Fire and Blood. Like it's not as much as The World of Ice and Fire. It's like every third page is artwork, but a decent amount of artwork every 20 or so pages, maybe a bit higher. But there's
and the majority of it is black and white, but then it's dispersed with
I think three sections of glossy color photos.
Mm. Yeah, it's got a mix, I guess, of the black and white and color. So it's got, you got both there. But it's definitely, I needed a hard copy book of, like, you know, hardcover.
Hardcover.
Hardcover, yeah. Version. Well, here we go. I have this Clash of Kings and soon.
You just need a hard one, I mean.
Well, you can't have too many paperbacks. Sometimes you need the hard ones. So, for your collection, right? You need it there. So that it's nice to, yeah, add this to it in soon to coming Storm of Swords. But then I guess we'll have to wait a long time for the other two if they match, right, the 20-year anniversary schedule.
I think their plan is to keep these so that they can be a matching set by the end of it. Mm. That's,
I hope so. I want the set. I'm not saying anything because I don't have the book, so I can't give my point of view.
We would have got, there was just some technical issues, otherwise we would have got it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I recently moved, so they don't have my address.
But we'll get you the next one, and yeah, you'll get this one. And this is, when you want to have a good copy of the books on your shelves, and this is it. You know, it's not like the ones where you have to spend like thousands of dollars. It's just a nice hardcover copy of the books that you can go back to and enjoy when you want to check something, one of the books or whatever.
I agree. I think these are my favorite versions of the books. Mm. I think they're beautiful. They're not quite as big as the hardcovers that come out at first. Mm. And they're not as small as the paperbacks. They're a good size. They look good. Obviously, you've got the beautiful illustrations, and I think they're my favorite version.
Cool. Well, thanks for Bantam for sending that to us. Bantam Random House and Penguin Random House, Bantam Books. So we got to check that out. The other bit of news I wanted to mention, because I just saw that today actually, is the Game of Thrones board game is coming to. It's having an electronic adaptation coming out. I saw that on YouTube, and I saw it in a news article. And so you'll be able to play online against other people, but also even against the computer. They're going to have an AI for that. So that was
really? Do you know what platforms?
We should stream us trying to play each other and watch Amin kick all our butts because he's the only one who knows how to.
No, Kyle knows how to play. Kyle,
I might put up a fight. I mean, not much of a fight, but maybe a little bit.
Kyle's played before, right? Like he.
Damn straight, I played several times.
He knows. Oh, okay. He knows the power of the sea.
Oh yeah, great choice.
She needs ships.
You control the ocean, control the land.
But we can also play against the computer, so it could be like the three of us against the three computers or something. So that's going to be interesting. It's going to be on PC, but I don't know.
Is that it? No, any console?
Is it something you could stream on Twitch?
iPad? Or
I don't think they're starting with. It's not. It's going to start in PC, which I assume like you know on Mac as well, but not on console or anything else. At least initially, who knows what they might do later with it.
I would love a version on my iPad.
Hmm. It seems to be that you could do it, so we'll see what happens. But maybe there'll be somebody who will do an emulator.
Because they have like Risk on the phone or the iPad, and it works great. I mean, there's lots of games like Terraforming Mars is coming out and stuff, and I think it's such a good product to put those board games on.
Hmm. Yeah, I think they'll probably see how it goes with the PC and then they could potentially expand. But I'm definitely looking forward to... It's coming out in 2020. I know that. That's the release. We don't know the exact release date, but...
So, 2 months from now.
Could be. We'll see.
Nice.
Well, maybe I'll contact them and see if I can get us some review copies. So we can play.
Oh, man. Well, I'd need to get a new computer first.
I think any computer could probably run this, but...
you don't know my computer. Yeah. I'm surprised it still runs Skype for these episodes. Great. Cool. The news that I know of is, as far as the television shows, is Game of Thrones kind of news, is that no spoilers involved here, is that they were working on a prequel. They filmed a pilot. There were lots of good actors on it, and they did not pick it up. So that has been canned.
Hmm.
But then they picked up. So that was a prequel about the Age of Heroes. That didn't get picked up. But they did pick up Fire and Blood. And they didn't even film a pilot of that. They just picked that one up without any test proof. So there is going to be a show. It's going to be Fire and Blood. And yeah. I don't know how they're going to have the budget to make all those dragon fights.
I just wonder, like, did this happen maybe because... When they were talking about that Heroes one, Fire and Blood hadn't come out yet in book form, and it wasn't, so they didn't realize they'd have this other popular book that they could pull from, and maybe now that they see this other book, they're like, let's just can this one and go with the one that we know is definitely going to draw people in.
I mean, that's certainly a possibility. My belief was that they made it and they realized that the Age of Heroes and the others and everything, The Long Night, was probably too similar to the show Game of Thrones.
Yeah. This is Fire and Blood has that more specific storylines they could pull from and could be good in a way. It's this potential. But as you said, how are they going to do the dragon parts? Like, that's going to be expensive if they fully adapt that. But there's other storylines that don't necessarily need the dragons. But on the other hand, kind of.
Did they say, has anyone said what portion of Fire and Blood they're focusing on?
All of it. No, I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's ways to avoid dragon fights for most of it, I think.
Yeah, because they specifically, I mean, the guys tried to avoid dragons as well, right? That was the whole point. You're just supposed to try to avoid dragons, although I think initially they were not good at it. There's a release date for...
I don't want to watch a Fire and Blood show that doesn't have dragons.
I'm trying to see if there's a Fire and Blood release date for Volume 2. Do we have that? I think we would have seen that by now if there was a...
No, I don't believe there is.
I haven't seen it.
A few years away, it says. Okay.
After the Game of Thrones digital board game.
They have priorities. Oh, I'll take Winds of Winter, please. That's so.
Winds of Winter for 500.
Yeah.
All right. Well, want to get into the chapters, folks?
Sure, let's do that. And just to note that this is the 250th episode. It is a milestone. In and of itself.
Are we celebrating?
Yep. Unfortunately, it didn't arrive, I guess. I was sending you guys some Dornish wine there.
Oh, well, let me go pop a cork right now at the end of this episode.
Grab a lemon cake, yeah.
Oh, I am a cheap date. It's going to go right through me. Nice.
And it's a good
250 chapters. Episodes. That's wild.
It is wild. Yeah, and then the show's done now too, and we're back on the books. And my view is as long as we got books to do this reread for, we're good. So that's probably another 5 to 10 years.
next book should be out by then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. What's our first chapter today? I don't have it. It is Storm of Swords. It is a Tyrion. It's Tyrion 10, so chapter 71 in A Storm of Swords. Anybody write a recap for this one?
No.
I'll take that as a no. So Tyrion is imprisoned after Joffrey's murder, and he's in the prison cell. And I guess in the last chapter, the Red Viper had said he would fight for him if Tyrion declared Wow, I totally forgot what that's called. Battle of Champions? What is it?
Trial by Combat?
Trial by Combat, thank you. Oh my gosh, I'm rusty, guys. So, Oberyn said he would fight for Tyrion.
They call it Trial by Battle even here. Trial by Battle, so there you go. But I think I've seen both terms used.
There. Okay. All right. So Tyrion's kind of contemplating that. And basically, at the end of this, we have that trial. Well, they bring him up on trial, and Shay gets brought out, and Shay makes up this story, and we don't know if she was paid off, or we don't know all the true motivations here. We'll discuss that in a minute, but Tyrion tells her to get out of here, and he says he wants a trial by combat. So Cersei, predicting this, has Clegane, you know, handy, ready to go, and but Oberyn kind of surprises everybody, and he stands up and declares that he's going to fight for Tyrion. And then later on, we actually get that battle where the two of them fight. And I think we all know how that ends in such a crushing manner. But So that's basically what happens in this chapter. We're going to discuss it. And I got to say, this is probably one of my favorite chapters in the entire series.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Oh, maybe not even, maybe not the chapter, maybe just the scene at the end. Fight. Oh, it's so
visual.
Good.
The line that reminds you of the Princess Bride just being repeated over and over again.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it was so well, I guess we'll get to the fight. We'll get to the fight. There's a lot to be said about that. But at the start, Tyrion is just figured that everyone thinks he's guilty, even Podrick Payne. He asks him, do you think I did it? And he can barely say anything. So Pod thinks he's guilty too.
Oh, Pod.
They bring in Shay, and Tyrion thinks, "Oh, Shay knows nothing that can hurt me." And then, right, the next sentence is like, they plotted it together. She said this girl he loved, and then she just betrays him right there.
This is so heartbreaking. I mean, yeah. For those of us who believe that Shay actually cared about him, I know not everybody does, but I did.
Mm.
I was devastated when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it crushed me.
At first, you're so angry, but then, you know, like, you also realize that how much choice was there. But then again, she did kind of go above and beyond.
Yes, that's right. She did it with relish. I mean, you're right. She really had limited choice. She had to testify against him, but she didn't have to go in quite such detail and give the most embarrassing, non-relevant parts, right? You didn't, like the giant Lannister, you don't have to mention that. That's not relevant to your testimony.
I mean, yeah, but that was, absolutely true. But that's part of why it hits so hard as well, because it's the humiliation of it. It's just devastating.
Everyone's laughing. Maybe, let's see. No one wants what their like sweet murmurings to be repeated in court. Like essentially, right? It's like they were recorded. It's like it was recorded and played here.
Mm. So what happened? Let's talk about this. Mm. What? So Shay, how does she end up here?
Well, Tyrion himself points it out that they would have questioned Sansa's maid, so they certainly found her at that point, and that's when, although that's a good question, maybe Ashley, you're talking about, do you think they found out, I guess they probably just said, you must testify against him, and then she just said these things. Like, that's the most charitable interpretation.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that her life was threatened.
Although,
I mean,
she was also then countered, like, not only threatened, and the opposite, if you do this, you get stuff, like, she's promised stuff later. They mentioned Feast for Crows, she was promised a marriage and something else, like, so she's promised the opposite, but that's usually how you do something. You threaten somebody one way and then you offer them something else on the other side.
Hmm. So are you guys in the camp that Shay loved Tyrion?
Absolutely not.
No, not Book Shay. She tolerated him. She didn't hate him. He was just a client.
Okay. So do you think there's any truth here with, now I haven't read the chapter where Shay first comes in a while, but she mentions here when she's talking to him, she's like, oh, on the, what was it? The Green Fork, that I was betrothed to this, or I was with this other knight and Tyrion had him killed. And then his men brought me to him. Is there any truth in this?
My view, no, because it's almost a half truth because I think she had a pimp and then Bronn got rid of her pimp. Like she was already experienced at what she was doing. She was betrothed and that's not what happened. Like, so
maybe she had found somebody and she had fallen in love and Timmit and Shagat or whoever killed him and then brought her to Tyrion. I don't know. Could she be holding this grudge through all this time looking to get back at Tyrion? Because something like that maybe actually did happen?
No, I don't believe it because she was so skilled at what she was doing. It was not this, like, she knew like how to treat Tyrion at the start and try to, like, you know, she knew what she was doing. And also she was always so, she seemed to be in her earlier conversations, like basically wanting to like Tyrion to marry her or be with her and stuff. Like she wanted to use him to get somewhere. She didn't want to betray him in this way. That's my view anyway.
Okay.
Ashley?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, given the opportunity, she would have married Tyrion. I mean, his money was way too much to, you know, not look past his faults.
Yeah.
Okay, so she cared about his money, not him.
Correct.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, I don't think that she hated him. I think that, again, he was, you know, he was just a person with a lot of money.
He was a good client. That's what he was, right? And so it could be a client she could settle on, like final client, right? Like could marry him. And that was her hope anyway. It wasn't realistic, but she seemed to be in her head.
Mm.
I mean, it does. If she loved him, that would add to the tragedy, but it really is that Tyrion loved her, or at least he feels that. That's what matters, that then he's betrayed here, like it's from Tyrion's point of view.
Could this already be, Tywin's machinations? From this early on with Shay, like, is he, does he, she is brought to his attention after Tyrion is arrested.
Tywin
sort of starts a relationship with her or whatever, and
it makes it clear that Tywin had to know that they were framing Tyrion, because, you know, if he knew that she was really just a prostitute,
that's an interesting point.
Then surely he would know that everyone else testifying had been bribed.
Well, I'm not
but Tywin, does Tywin even care about that? He just wants to see Tyrion out of the picture, right?
Yeah, I think he doesn't. He doesn't want Tyrion dead necessarily. I think the offer to go to the Wall was possibly true. I think it's a convenient way to get rid of Tyrion. Without, you know, killing him and getting his blood in your hands. Like, just, he doesn't care about that, but it could still be an indirect, you know, kinslaying or whatever. So I don't think Tywin didn't bring her into the trial. I mean, into the trial, because that's embarrassing. I think she said, and Tywin's like, is pissed off about that. Now, it's just kind
of,
he is, because he's embarrassed. He's just like pissed off. Everyone's laughing, and he's just getting mad. Everyone's laughing. He doesn't want, that's the thing he hates. He doesn't want people to laugh at them.
He doesn't want people to laugh at his twisted son.
Castilla Lannister.
He hates.
It's just the same as like when they took his son. He hates his son, but he can't let them, you know, look down.
Yeah, it's embarrassing him along with.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That being said, it is still I mean, if you assume, unless Shay was planted there, it says something about Tywin that after all of this, he's like, okay, well, I'm gonna just use Shay now as a whore, like, and like.
That's where I kind of think he doesn't mind his son being ridiculed, is because he ends up looking like a hypocrite when a whore is in his bed, when Shay's in his bed later on after he's a total hypocrite in that thing. But like,
it makes me wonder
what else he's, you know, enjoying that he's not supposed to, like the humiliation of his son or something.
No, he doesn't. It's going indirectly on him. You can see he's getting pissed off about this. But I think his point with whores is not that you can't use them. He just doesn't like the way Tyrion does. Like, if it was just a business transaction and it was secret and no one saw it, he's fine with that. But Tyrion is doing it publicly and people are seeing and stuff. But that being said, the fact that he still went to Shay shows either that he just... Well, there's three interpretations. One, that he just really just views it as a pure business transaction. He doesn't care anything. He doesn't care that this woman was with his son or anything. It's just a transaction to him. Two is what you're getting into, Kyle, that maybe he gets some kind of sick perversion. He's like, this was my son's whore. Now I'm going to have her. That's the sick perversion interpretation. And and three is just like the whole thing that we've talked about for years. Is maybe she was planted there. Theory that does... It's stubborn. It doesn't go away. It's still there, possibly.
As a potential. I hope we get an answer to this someday. Like, even more than who John's true parents are, I want to know, like, what's the deal with Shay and Tywin?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Love it. Awesome. So,
But what's interesting, one of the things interesting here is Oberyn is trying to be fair, because he already realized, or he already for sure saw that this is just some kind of giant frame job. Is just so over the top, all these things, it can't be believed. And so he's like, how could you know of this? So he's like questioning the witness initially for that point, and then he's just like, oh, what sorts of things? That's his more personal interest. What's happening? That's one of the best lines of Oberyn. So
I always struck that as genuine curiosity.
Yeah, it's like, what's going on there? Yeah, so the whole giant of Lannister, everyone's laughing. Even the Viper is laughing. It's just Tywin Lannister. He says, sat between them as if made of stone, his fingers steepled beneath his chin. He was the only person not laughing.
Yeah, see, that doesn't give me a, I'm angry at this. This gives me a, ha-ha, my plan is working perfectly.
I don't view it that way.
But... Yeah.
I totally do. I do.
I'm on the mean side of this.
Yeah. Well, let us know out there what you think of that.
You guys are much smarter than me, so I should believe what you tell me.
Okay, so then Shay's taken out, and Tyrion says, guilty, so guilty, is that what you wanted to hear? And they're saying, are you confessing? No, not of his Joffrey's death. He's guilty of being a dwarf, of being born, and gets into his little speech there about that. Which is true in a sense. It's like, Tywin says, you're not on trial for being a dwarf, but I have been my entire life.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting.
So he declares.
Yeah.
Trial by combat.
And then initially Cersei is happy. She has Clegane there, and then like, you have a champion to defend you, and Oberyn steps in, which is a thunderous moment there.
The dwarf has quite convinced me. The uproar was deafening. Nice.
Tywin doesn't like that because, as Tyrion says, it really throws a wrench in whatever happens is going to cause trouble here. But when you have the trial by battle, and then Tyrion's in a better mood and he's singing a song from Simon the Silver Tongue. He's like, I should have got the whole song from him before he got killed. Got him killed. And then, then it switches. I like the flow of this chapter. It just covers so much. It covers that, and then it flows into the next morning, and he has a nice big breakfast with, like, all this, the detail. I'm like, I like this breakfast. I think this is in the feast book, with the eggs and the Dornish peppers breakfast. And then Oberyn's there drinking in the morning. It's like, oh, you shouldn't be drinking. And they talk about the battle a bit, but what's going to happen.
Yeah, tell me what's going on here. I mean, I'm a little confused about Prince Oberyn and Marcella and going for her over Tommen. Tell me what's going on here. What's happening?
Oh, okay, sure. I mean, well, Oberyn is just saying whatever he wants here, which is he doesn't care like who's listening. I guess he figures he's protected to a certain degree, but he's essentially, I mean, as it says, he thinks Tyrion has Sansa squirreled away somewhere, and if she has Sansa, then maybe she can influence the North. But anyway, Tyrion has a potential claim to Castle Rock, so he wants Tyrion to come to Dorne with him, and then they can essentially crown Marcella, and then, you know, have Tyrion on their side, and potentially start a war there, basically. Try to crown Marcella via that route.
So Tyrion's going to go down to Dorne.
Yeah.
They're going to bring Marcella down there. And then they're going to just say, she's the queen.
Well, Marcella's already there. Marcella's already in Dorne, right?
Oh, sorry. They want she's already there.
Tyrion to come join, and then they can marry Marcella to Tristan, I guess.
Because in Dorne, women have all the rights like the men do. So because she's older, she can be the queen.
That's right. And it's really a win-win. I think they talked about this scenario a bit earlier, too, when they asked who Cersei would support. It's like either, I mean, let's say they don't fight and they just accept that. Well, now the Dornish are on the throne. By Marcella, if they do fight, then they have a claim even with their own person, right? They have a claim via Marcella against like the Lannisters. It's going to really muddy the waters there.
Mm.
So certainly an interesting that would be a whole like the alternate universe version of the books goes into that. Tyrion goes south with the Viper, and then all of that happens. And of course, Tyrion doesn't tell the Viper that he doesn't know where Sansa is. He just lets that roll, like he keeps that assumption up. But even without Sansa, right. He would still go with them. Like that'd still be useful, like as an advisor or whatever. So that discussion,
they might be less inclined to try to crown Marcella if they don't have the North support.
True, but how much support do you think they can get, though? Like, I think they want the North support. That'd be nice, symbolically, if not getting, you know, troops. But I mean, how much is it really? Like, I think they just want to get their ducks in a row. Like, it'd be nice to have the North on their side as well on that issue. But.
I guess it's more, you know, the enemy of the Lannisters is my friend, and the North would be more inclined to fight against Tommen.
Yeah, I mean, Doran is a big planner, and Oberyn, although he's hot-headed, is not completely hot-headed. He still respects Doran on that point and knows that there's plans going on, and maybe I'm being a little bit too... Maybe you are right in the sense that I'm thinking, okay, who's going to support the Starks out of the North? But they're always they could always maybe make a deal with the Boltons, like just the North in general. They might be able to make a deal with, or at least keep them neutral.
Mm.
So that's a whole interesting potential political plans going on there. And then he says whatever he wants, and then Tyrion looks at the spear and he sees black. Is that oil or poison? And he's not sure what it is, and it is poison. And if only Oberyn had messed with that, because apparently that poison it was very fast acting, but. They had changed it to make it more long, like a slower poison.
So they did?
They did. That comes out later because they figure out like...
We learn that later. Okay.
Qyburn is like, oh, it looks like they... He's like, they magically changed his poison. And Cersei's like, oh, you're a dumbass? Why are you talking about magic? But...
Wait, they used magic? They didn't just like dilute it or something?
Yeah, initially Cersei thought that it was diluted. But he's saying, no, it wasn't diluted to the sense that it would be weaker. It's just as strong. It just takes... slower. It just acts slower. It normally just goes straight to the heart and just kills them in a few seconds. Well, that would be nice if that worked that way here.
Well, that would have been nice.
That would have been over.
It yeah, but
over.
then Oberyn wouldn't have got what he wanted.
No, he wouldn't have, and that's the problem. He says he wants justice, but he also has that personal vendetta that he wants. Like, if he just be happy enough to just to kill the guy.
No, he wants the admission.
He wants the admission that it was him and that Tywin did it. But even if it was him, do you think he would have said that Tywin did it? Like, I don't think so.
No.
Okay, well, let's move on. We're getting to the battle. Well, actually, we're almost at the battle. We're looking at the point where, again, the previous tilt between Tywin and Oberyn's mother, because which is really interesting how potentially both Jaime and Cersei were going to be married off to Oberyn and Elia, right? That potential marriage alliance via the parents.
Yeah.
Because the mothers knew each other, and then even on the way, like Baelor...
Breakwind?
Yeah, Baelor Breakwind situation. And and it's really sad. And Tyrion thinks that, if she had married him, she would be fine. Now, although probably it still wouldn't have happened because those were all appetizers on the way to the main meal, is the way that it's described. But they get to the point...
So Tywin didn't agree to the marriage because Cersei should be with Rhaegar. She wasn't betrothed yet to Rhaegar. But that was his goal.
That was his goal. Fair enough. He wants to do that. But then he was like so insulting that instead of offering Jaime, like you can have Tyrion. It's like, what the hell? They're not.
Yeah. Just imagine if Jaime married Elia, then yes. Maybe Rhaegar would have married Cersei because who? What other highborn girl?
Well, it would have taken away that good option, right? So he messed up there both, you know, tactically and tactfully. Like he could have offered Jaime in response, yeah. But also would have. Yeah, that's a good point. He would have taken her out of the picture, right? But
so was Tywin insulted because his daughter was for Rhaegar and nobody else, and he got so upset that he.
Well, remember his Tyrion wife had just died, so he's just in pissed off mood already.
Oh, okay. She had just died.
His wife had just died, but that was the point. They waited as long as appropriate, and then we got to get on with his business here. And he's like, "No, I died. I'm going to talk about it." So he was actually emotional.
It seems out of character for him, but I guess having his wife just pass away.
Yeah.
Maybe that makes
the thought is why not Jaime though? Jaime was available, or was he not available? Because this seems.
Yeah.
To be...
Who did he want Jaime to marry? Maybe Daenerys.
Well, Lysa. Lysa Tully, although I don't know if the ages are right at this point. I know that there's some point where there was some discussion of Jaime going with Lysa. I don't know where it is in the books, but there was that potential. I don't know if that's later on in the ages or if it was earlier. I can't remember if Lysa's age quite matches up. But that was definitely one of the... And if it was, that could make sense. Tywin is...
I think it was... Wasn't it Hoster that offered Lysa to Tywin, not the other way around, I think.
But when is the question, right? Had he already done so and that's on his mind? Like, because it is a good match, like, because it's a regional, it's a lord right nearby, like, that the king, you want to be, if you want to make a good alliance on one front, they're right there. So maybe, if Lysa was on the table, maybe that's why he said no, but if she wasn't, then I think that's a mistake, that he just said, you can...
Yeah, because Dorne seems like a step up from the Riverlands.
It is in terms of prestige, in a sense, and maybe closeness to the throne. But on the other hand, like when your main focus is most of the time are either within your own kingdom area or your borders, and the Riverlands is one border, and then Jaime could rule like kind of both, right? It potentially, maybe he could rule both the Tullys and Castle Rock like through him. So I think that's a good alternative, but we just don't know of the timing if that was on his mind or if he just being annoying and he just said no, you can have Tyrion. It was a good match, I think. It would have been interesting. There's your what ifs. It's just a different timeline there. But, I mean, it all goes back to... Go ahead. Sorry.
We need a what if series for this book, not just the Marvel one coming up.
Yeah, well, we've done what ifs before. We'll have to get a what if episode again. But the point that no matter what the timeline was, Tyrion's point is true, that they're all just puppets dancing to their parents' strings. It's going back to the parents, and then the same thing, the children will be the same thing. It's all going back to that, all the previous... slights and tilts and all that in the Game of Thrones and in just the, you know, these marriage alliances and stuff.
Ugh.
So, and then this... Oberyn says your father lost that battle, but then he didn't forget that. So he goes to his theory that he thinks the father ordered his father, Tywin ordered to kill Elia and her children, like both.
Mm.
And Dagos Manwoody is there.
Well. Yes, he puts on what, his helmet or his armor?
That's right, put on the helmet, and he's helping with the armor in general. So we got a man Woody here.
Yes, doing his job, man Woody, sheathing that snake.
That's right, and there you go. Then we get into the battle, the big battle.
The big battle. It's a really small battle, actually.
Well, it's not exactly clear on the time. He says, like, it seems like a long time. Like, they're quite a circling and fighting and fainting for a long time as they got tired.
So this, I remember where I was when I read this. I was working at a theater. I was acting at the time, and I was basically, not literally, but basically, because I was so busy, living out of my car, because I was rarely ever home. And I had gone to eat, and then I had gotten to rehearsal late at night, and I got in there like, I don't know, 15 minutes early, and I was in my car, and I only had, you know, these four pages left, and I was like, oh, let me finish up this chapter before I go rehearsal. And it was some, you know, beautiful play, and I'm in love, and everything's great, and we're all happy. And I read this, and his head gets smashed in at the end, and I was like, and then I had to go pretend to be happy, and in my head I just had the image of the Red Viper's skull just crushed and destroyed. I will always remember where I was when I read this part of the chapter.
Yeah, right. It's that shocking chapter that you think if only it ended a few paragraphs earlier, but yeah, it kept going.
And I feel so bad for the stable boy who,
yeah, exactly.
He gets his arm chopped off,
yeah,
and then Gregor tells him to shut up,
yeah,
and then cuts off the top of his head.
Just slices him, and it shows earlier in the chapter how everyone was starting to move in to get a better view. So they were pushing into the danger zone, and the guards were trying to hold them back, the King's Guard, and then they got pushed right into the middle of the thing. And then I think it's mentioned later, like, that first chop was an accident, but he killed the kid.
The kid starts screaming because he got his arm chopped off.
Yeah.
And Gregor Clegane goes, shut up, to the kid, and then chops off his head, or chops his head in half.
Yeah.
Doesn't chop off his head. He chops his head in half, horizontally.
It shows Gregor's is, we don't exactly know what happened to him, but he's like dying. But if he had real justice here, that's straight up murder. Now it's a stable boy. I guess they don't care. He just killed a stable boy in front of like 1,000 people.
Yeah, but he's a lord. He's lord.
Yeah,
he could do it,
lord and sir. Like he's lord of his own, like the Cleganes, and he's a sir and whatever. But it's just like, I think it was mentioned by somebody else though. I'm not sure if it was Kevin or someone else said like that, specifically that point, that the second chop was intentional, and like they're pissed off about it. Or I don't even know if they said Clegane should be killed or something. But somebody definitely noted it. But yeah. So then the son of Dorne here, the son comes in and Gregory puts it to his back, which is to his advantage, but then Oberyn uses his shield to his advantage there to shine the light in. Like a lot of
those. I love the writing there where you think like the mountain was the first to put his back to the sun. And it was like, oh man, no, he's going to get the drop on Oberyn now.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh wait, no, that's exactly what Oberyn wanted.
Yeah.
Shines in his face and he gets him.
He gets his first hit there. And that's where if it was still poisoned back to like the regular poison, he probably would have died then or really closely when he got hit again and fell down. Like he wouldn't have the strength to do what he did later.
I mean, yeah, he would have killed him, but I feel like they would have said it was not a fair fight or something, yeah, because he was poisoned.
Well, it depends, because how close, because he stabs him a few times really closely and he falls over. So the fact that his heart stopped wouldn't make much of a difference if he just fell over. Like how could you tell, right? But you're right.
Well, like, if it happens in like a few seconds, like he stabs him, pulls it out, and then Gregor just drops dead, it'd be like, okay, well, this fight is, you are disqualified. Yeah.
It very well could have happened like that. Although in this particular thing, it all does happen in a few seconds. It literally does. He stabs him once, he goes around back, stabs him again, he falls over. Like it could have been.
Well, we don't know exactly how many seconds that is. It could be, 30 seconds. Yeah. We don't know.
In fact, he falls over faster than I thought. So maybe the poison is still having some effect quickly, not enough to kill him immediately, but like
this isn't a round of D&D that just lasts 6 seconds. You know, maybe each strike is a little longer than that.
Yeah. Well, he gets him and he falls over and all he had to do is just not walk right up to him.
Well, first he catapults over him.
Yeah.
He shoves the spear into him.
It breaks, and now he has a spear pinning him to the ground. And then he's just too overconfident there. Sure.
Grabs the great sword, goes in, and Gregor grabs him.
Yep.
And that's it.
Oh. So what does he do first? He jams his eyes and then he punches his face in? Or, okay,
he jams his eyes, knocks out his teeth, and then goes for the killer blow.
So he just shoves his gauntleted hand into the helmet and just like grinds his head, right?
Ugh. Well, he didn't have a helmet.
Did he take it off?
Well, he had the front of his face was open. I don't know if the helmet came off or he just punched the front of the face.
Because he had a half helmet.
Yeah.
I always imagined Gregor just shoves his hand into the helmet and basically just grinds up the Red Viper's face inside his helmet.
Well, it's a punch. Like, it's not like a grinding motion. It's like a...
I picture him punching the face in and then...
He held them so close that they were practically kissing. It's kind of how it was described. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was more like it was a press. It wasn't punching at that point. It was just pressing into the eyes. Because there's no room to punch at that.
Oh, no, he's saying for the killer blow, though. Well, it says unprotected face, so you're right. It's possible he never... I mean, he easily could have just pulled off his helmet when he got him there, but he didn't do it.
No, he has a half helmet on, because earlier in the chapter, Tyrion specifically says he didn't even have a nose guard on.
Yeah.
So it was basically a worthless helmet, but he had a helmet on.
Yeah.
He makes sure to point that out. He drew his huge fist, the blood on his gauntlet seemed to smoke in the cold dawn air. There was a sickening crunch. Ilaria Sand wailed in terror. Yeah, so I always imagine, you know, he pokes him in the eyes, he punches at his teeth, and then he draws back for like a skull crushing punch right into his helmet.
It's a single punch, then that just, and he's dead. Tyrion's vomiting up his breakfast, and then the line.
Ilaria Sand is wailing in terror. Yeah.
Put my life in the Red Viper's hands, and he dropped it, and then snakes have no hands. He gets laughing, and then he's taken to the black cells.
Ugh. And scene.
Yeah.
Every time I read it, I would need to throw up a little bit. Ugh. So good. So good. So then, after that, we move to Daenerys' chapter. And I don't know what number it is, because I don't have that in front of me.
Daenerys, it's chapter 6, I think. Yeah, 6.
6, chapter 72, Storm of Swords. You want to recap this one?
Sure. It's after they've taken over Meereen, there's been a sack of the city, and then Dany's restored order and punished some of the slavers there, and she's trying to figure out what exactly to do in Meereen, and then she hears some emissaries. Well, an emissary comes from Astapor telling her the bad news of Astapor's basically had a revolt, and they've put a butcher king into power there, and then another envoy comes who wants to buy slaves. She says, I'm not going to sell any slaves, and there's people who actually want to be sold in slavery so they can get out of here because they don't feel safe in Meereen, and they'd rather go to the free cities as skilled slaves. So she allows that and taxes, but you can only put yourself into slavery. You can't put your wife or your kids into slavery. And then she has to decide what to do with Barristan and Jorah. She ends up forgiving Barristan, but Jorah, she condemns him to exile, and then she ultimately decides to stay in Meereen. If she can't rule a single city, how is she going to rule the Seven Kingdoms? That's her philosophy. So she's going to try to stabilize Meereen, especially with what happened in Astapor. That was in her mind. So that's the chapter in a nutshell.
Right. So let's talk about Astapor here at the beginning.
Sure.
What's the guy's name, the Butcher King? Cleot?
Cleos or something like that?
Cleon the Great.
Cleon. There we go. Cleot, Cleos, Cleon. Cleon.
Cleon the Great.
So this envoy here tells Daenerys and the court the story about how the council that Daenerys put in place, they were traitors, they were going to turn against her, and so Cleon showed up and he took them out, and he's loyal to her.
And that how much of this, hella believable.
yeah. How much of this is absolute bullshit? It sounds like you guys think 100%. The council was never going to turn against her. Were they thinking about turning against her? Did Cleon just see a bunch of people and kill them and take over? Or is there any bit of truth in this?
I think there's zero truth.
There's no truth, especially with the guy who took power. It just shows that like the area is unstable. Now, my question is,
so are you saying, so by absolute no truth, you're saying that this council that Daenerys put in place was 100% loyal to her, what she wanted to do? They weren't going to turn from that at all?
Well, I can't say 100%, but they're certainly better than Cleon.
So
she put a council.
I mean, that's what I'm asking here. Yeah. Did any of the council were any of them going to be good in that position? Were any of them going to be bad? Was it a good thing that Cleon took them out?
Well,
I think they were going to try.
Yeah, I think they were going to try to rule out support properly. And the question is, did Dany leave any support with them? I'm not sure. Did she leave like a, you know, 500 Unsullied or 1,000 Unsullied to support them? Or, and we don't know about that explicitly, or she left nothing and they were easy targets? Like, I'm not sure what happened there. Okay. I mean, I suppose in theory that she might have left them and then this still happened. The guy killed them and then the Unsullied followed her. But if she left nothing, then that's a mistake, I think.
Okay. So this guy takes over and he just wants to marry her.
Yeah, well, the city is in ruins already. Like, it's not being run properly. They're just making you Unsullied there. And he has a marriage alliance, which is insulting, to say the least, to Dany.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's a butcher king. I mean, you can tell. I mean, I think Martin is actually just the symbolism of a butcher king. He's just putting out a little heavy, almost. Just like, this is what can happen if an area becomes unstable. Some butcher king will take power. It's like literally a butcher king takes power here. It's like Khmer Rouge. It's like Cambodia, essentially. Well, it becomes like that later on, I think. Mm. But
now he's a butcher king.
It kind of comes back to the thing: is like, who holds the power, the king or the swords?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well,
like, you can be a king, but if people aren't following you, then are you a king?
Yeah.
Well, they are. He's got enough of a support of initial like fighters or whoever to impose his rule, but
but I'm talking about like the council. If they could hold an army, then
that's right. That's the whole point. Like, I don't know the answer clearly one way or another. Maybe if somebody has analyzed this particular point, I've seen people say that criticize Dany in this point, and they assume that she hadn't left anybody to support them, like, you know, so a garrison to support them. I don't know. We don't have the facts before. If she didn't, then that is definitely a mistake. But it could be she did and it wasn't enough. It just got overwhelmed. But I don't know the details of it.
True. We don't know. Don't know. All right. What's next?
They also do mention something that is true, though, that the young Kai are trying to build up support against her. I mean, they do that later. That's going to happen. What's next beyond that is you have that slaver ship wants to buy slaves here.
Yeah, they're balling.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Nobody knows how to do any business out here unless it involves slaves.
they brought stuff to sell it to them. I guess slaves are what they have to sell there.
Yeah. Isn't there some young entrepreneur who's like, let me capitalize on there being no slaves anymore. Like, come on, folks.
Well, part of the problem is a lot of the... I remember a lot of the trees got burned and stuff, I think. They don't have a lot. They have a persimmon tree here that's mentioned here. I like persimmons, by the way. They're good. You ever had a persimmon? They're tasty. But I think a lot of the agriculture that they even had was gone. So they don't have a lot left. They're trying. Dany tries to get some trade routes going, I think. But
chaos is a ladder. Figure it out.
Well, I mean, it just seems that their economic systems in general are just so weak. So lower, they're not developed. That like the fact that these people are like, oh, we're worried here, so we'd rather sell ourselves into slavery, and then we'll have all the security. It's like, well, couldn't you just do that without being slaves? Maybe, like you could just.
Well, to be honest with you, the description the guy gives about the people who want to be slaves are like going to be in great positions.
They are in very good positions.
They're
going to
be safe. They're going to be in safe houses. They're going to be treated really well. Be doing meaningful stuff like teaching people or. I can understand their position.
Yeah, especially when you compare it.
Especially
to
if they're older, especially if they're older, and this is all they've known, and it's the life they know. It's
The compare it to the uncertainty of what's happening in Marine, what happened in Astapor. They think we could die here. They can certainly do that, but then the other answer becomes, well, why can't they just do that without being slaves? Could they not just go there and just? Not even necessarily have a wage and pay back, just be like, their wage would be that they'd be kept, they'd be able to sleep there and have the food or whatever, but it's just they haven't developed the systems there. Like, it's just slavery is just an easier system to use.
Yeah.
It's not developed enough. But it might be. I mean, Dany's stirred things up enough that there could be developments there.
We'll see. We'll see. Well, we probably won't see, but...
So then, yeah.
Hear from Cleon again?
Oh, yeah.
You got to mention
Cleon. Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot of Cleon. Cleon screws up Astapor and he gets his ass kicked, and all this stuff happens later. So that's coming.
Okay. I can't wait to read about him again. I forgot.
The Butcher King.
Right. Now, he's a Butcher King because he was a butcher, right?
He was a butcher. And then
he chopped up the council and became the Butcher King.
That's right. King Cleaver.
He's like an evil Donald Noy. Oh, no, he's the blacksmith. Sorry. I thought he was the cook for a second.
Yeah. Okay. And then it says, Zorzhides. They have Zorzhides to trade, Kyle.
No!
Not only Zorzes, but the Zorzhides, the dead horse.
I think I blocked that out when I read this earlier today.
Kyle's fear of Zorzes or returns, but...
They don't exist. Fiction. I don't care how many little images you send me.
I wonder if there's a picture of a Zorzh in Clash of Kings. It might be because of Vargo Hoat and the one.
Straight.
Yeah.
What happens next? They bring in Jorah? Is that what happened next?
Yeah, Jorah and Barristan. I guess we'll start with Barristan first. So they're talking about how the two were able to, and with a small group of men, get into the city, get through the sewers. They had to kill what looked like an alligator or something on the way there.
Pale alligator. Yeah. It sounds like there were two of them.
Yeah, potentially. And then there's rats, giant rats, too. And Barristan is first put there, has to explain himself, says what happened after the Mad King died and why he's here. And then, he's honest. He says, I'm going to tell you some hard truths, but this is what happened. And humble at the same time, because she's like, what do you want to just be my, I'll have you be my cook. What about that? And he's like, okay, but I hope you like burned and charred duck.
Is that what he says? It sounds to me like he's like, yeah, I can cook a few things, sure.
Yeah, exactly. He says he'll do it. He'll do it. He's saying, I can't guarantee you'll like it, but I'll do it. So he's humble and takes the right attitude, I think. Honest, humble, and takes the right attitude. And she's willing to forgive him. And he takes his sword from her and all that. But Jorah comes in the wrong way. She said, or at least according to Dany, pisses her off, right?
Yeah.
Comes in, he's not
says one wrong thing after another.
That's right.
Poor guy.
That's right. One wrong thing after another. If he just came in and begged for
goodness. Well, you know what? I know that. I know how that feels. When I go on a date with a pretty lady that I'm interested in, I say all the wrong things, okay?
Yeah.
It's true. It's very accurate writing.
So when you're on a date call, you say, I am no man's creature.
That's my opening line.
I took the eunuch's gold, yes.
You know what? I say some dumb things, okay? But if she catches on, she knows what I'm quoting, then, we're going to get married.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good test, I guess, to see.
Man. So, he kind of hangs himself here. Not literally. But
he takes the wrong attitude and then just tries to justify, and he's like warning it. He's just saying all the wrong things. He's warning against other people, not himself, and pisses her off essentially. And then she's not willing to forgive him. And his betrayal was more direct too. Barristan was indirect, kind of. Other than the lie, like he went to Robert, but she wasn't even there. He just lied when he first came here. But Jorah actually put her in danger and kept lying for a long time.
So she has no choice but to kick him out. She can't keep him around, that's for sure.
Yeah, although they mention, she thinks about that. Other people mention, they're like, you should either forgive him or kill him. Like, that she's letting him go away. He could be a danger. Dario says that he'd like to kill him off for her. But they let him go. Dario, by the way, plunders like a whole new outfit for himself. Earlier on. I think a bunch of people were plundering stuff, so he has like a new outfit.
Man, he is so ugly. Oh boy, Dario.
So then,
I really wish they would have just made him super eccentric in the show. I mean, that was the whole appeal, was just how out there he was.
He looked rather bland in the show, right? Like, it's like, what's special about this guy?
He looked like random soldier number 5.
Yeah, but he was a handsome dude. I mean, all, what, three of them that were cast?
He's just so over the top. Like, he has, like, his golden tooth here and stuff, and then Danny's dreaming of his golden tooth.
He's supposed to have swagger. The guy on the show didn't have any swagger.
He's peacocking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's totally peacocking. Gold and purple and sexy lady knives. And
I gotta say, my favorite cosplays are the reverse Dario cosplays, where a girl is cosplaying him.
Oh yeah.
Well, I've seen one that had the dagger hilts with buff dudes on it. It was great.
Well, that's the creativity of the cosplay. There's different cosplays out there, people doing different interpretations.
Some great stuff.
Somebody did the Werewood like internet from our podcast. We were talking about like Werewood internet. They did that at Ice and FireCon a few years back. The Werewood net.
Nice.
I think there was someone at it last year too who was doing it, like a different one. Cool. I could be wrong, so maybe I'm insulting that person, but I thought I saw one. And
Well, Jorah sent off, and then Danny's thinking what to do about the city. Still, she tells Missandei, "Never betray me, but never lie to me. I never would." I wonder if that's. This theory is that maybe Missandei might betray her at some point, so it's kind of interesting that this line will be important if she does one day. But she decides to ultimately stay in Marine. She wakes up and decides to stay.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, she's got a good point.
She does.
Can't rule a kingdom. Can't rule a city.
That's right. This is like you start with. It's like Sim City. You start with a Sim City, and then you move on to like you gotta start small and move big. And she realized that she also caused a lot of damage there to the location as well. She's got to try to make up for that, stabilize a little bit this time. Can't just leave like Astapor.
Yeah, she's got a lot to learn. Absolutely.
Yeah, but she at least takes responsibility there that she's willing to learn now and have her dragons grow and be there. So I think this is our last chapter in the book, I think. It's a decisive moment. She's deciding, I'm going to stay here, and that's going to be the thing.
Yeah, I think so. Interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, there we go. We definitely glazed over some bit about how the whole explanation of how they actually took Marine.
Yes, sir.
But no, I don't really have anything to add in that. They snuck in and they turned the slave, they set the slaves free, and they took apart boats and made rams and ladders. And
yeah,
the mechanics, the captains are angry.
That important. Although the one other quick thing to mention is that she did crucify. I think, right? Like the 165 people or 160 or whatever that she faced.
Yeah, I think which she was like happy with at first, and then she saw them and she was like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, she has certain thoughts about that. Then there's a lot, I mean, some people have discussions with that.
She seems to have a lot of back and forth in her own mind about.
Yeah, whether she should have done that. She ultimately lets them be taken down, so they're going to be buried. They're going to be cleaned out and buried, but.
Yeah. So, here we go. She's staying at Marine, folks.
Yep. And then you get to the fifth book, and everyone's like, when is she going to leave?
Yeah. Why are you still there?
I think everybody read. Is there anybody who didn't read this chapter and go, get out of there? When's she getting back to Westeros?
Well, when it was Storm of Swords, you can get her point. Her dragons aren't even growing properly. Like, they gotta get them bigger dragons and get the army stabilized. Like,
yeah, no. By the end of book four, that's when we started to get annoyed.
That's right.
And now we're at the end of book five. And
oh, man. Yeah, and now she's back with the Khalasar somewhere.
I mean, you get to book five, and then you're like, okay, this is going to be the decisive moment, and then that's what we need is the next book. So it was longer than expected, but we'll see.
You know what I just noticed? That in the back of these paperback books in the houses, the kings and courts appendix, there's just the sigil, and then like King of the North, King of the Trident, and there's just like a sigil. But in the illustrated book, in the Clash of Kings illustrated one, they actually have artwork of the shield, of the crest. Like it's a more elaborate artwork in the appendix for each house. Actually shows them on the sigil on a shield.
Well, so. That's the luxuries you have when you have the illustrated edition. You can have the little features like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And it's good to see these. Like, I'm so used to the Game of Thrones sigils that I see Stark and I'm like, what is... Oh, that's a wolf. That is a wolf. I like it. It's neat. Very cool. Awesome. Well, there we go, folks. Anything before we sign off? Any last words or thoughts?
Nope. That's all I got.
All right. Ashley, got anything to advertise at the end?
can't think of anything at the moment.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of A Podcast of Ice and Fire. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Podcast of Ice and Fire, APOIAF, and join the forums, join the discussion, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
See ya.
Cool. Thanks. It's fun.
Yay.
Awesome.
Okay.
One bites the dust.
Yeah. Looks like it's recorded, so that's good. Perfect.
Good. Remember when we recorded that one episode like 3 times?
Yeah, that was a while back, though. Which one was it? It was sad that we had to record again. It was a really good one, and then we lost the whole damn like episode. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. That sucked.
Yeah, because we recorded it again, and then we're like, we kind of summarized. We're like, we had talked about these things, and then we talked about half the length. And then the third time, we're like, yeah, we talked about these things for an hour. We'll just talk about 2 minutes, move on. And it's missing, like, so we had some really, I remember that. That was like 3 years ago at least, probably, right? That was a while back.
Time flies.
Yeah.
I was a young man back then.
We got to get you some marriage offers here, Kyle. I got to send you on your tour around.
I'm working on it. All right, guys, I am gonna head out, but it was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
happy first Thanksgiving, Ashley.
Yeah
it'll be exciting. I hope. Or at least good food.
Absolutely. Good food, football, bring it on. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah, cheers.
Oh yeah, that's another thing. I've started watching football now.
Yeah.
Can't get away from it, being in Chicago with the Bears.
Da Bears.
Oh, well, yeah. Da Bears. It will be a football on Thanksgiving.
Awesome. All right, guys. Have a good evening.
Yeah.
All right. See ya. You guys too.
Bye. You are excuse me. I got something in there. Okay.